Welcome to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. It is just a joy that today we are having people here in person and people at home all sharing this experience together. I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry, and it is my pleasure to serve this joyful, incredibly flexible congregation. So you are welcome here, no matter who you are, no matter where you are, no matter what time you're watching this service, you are so welcome here with us in this community. We are all blessed gifts of this universe. Every one of us, no matter how we feel or how we're doing today, we are blessed children of the universe, and every one of us is welcome. So we already asked, if you're here, please put your phone on airplane mode, and that's true downstairs as well. And I want you all to know, if you're here in person, that we're not singing yet. So sing along in your mind. If you are so called, you can stand up during the hymns and move. That's all fine ways to express yourself. If you're at home, you get to sing. And if there's a live chat on the side of your screen, say hello so you know that you're here with other people. So there's a couple of announcements I wanted to make. One is that this Thursday, on December 9th, we will be having a Darkest Night Blue Christmas service. It's going to be on Zoom. And if this is a service for people for whom the holidays feel particularly painful or difficult. Sometimes it's hard to deal with all the joy and happiness when you're really having a struggling time in your own life. So please come to that service. We'll be together in that pain and that grief. And that information is in the holiday letter I sent that last week, as well as in your announcements that came in your email this morning. We're also doing a Christmas ornament exchange and offering holiday packages to everyone this year. And these packages are full of supplies for celebrating the holiday season at home. There's a holiday grace, and there's Christmas Eve candles for taking a picture of your family for Christmas, for our Silent Night video that we're going to do on Christmas Eve. So for all of you who are in person, we're going to be handing those out after the service from 11:30 to 1:30. And if you're at home, please show up between 11 and 1:30 and say hi to Hannah and I and get these bags. But they can also be picked up anytime that you want, and they're going to be in the ribboned cabinet right next to the minister's office, next to Fireside. It's right in between there. So please pick those up. They're pretty fun. So today we're going to have coffee hour here in the sanctuary and also online. And so online people and people in person can engage in coffee hour together. If you want to gather in smaller groups and talk, you're welcome to do that outside or downstairs. We do ask that if you're inside that you do distance. So I want to light the chalice this morning. May the flame of this chalice remind us of the spark of life that glows everywhere, inciting us all to joy. So let us say our affirmation together. Someday it's going to be on the screen, but if you're here, you can just kind of say it along with all of us, and if you're at home, it's in your order of service. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful. Let us open our minds to learn what is true. Let us open our hearts to love one another. Now we will have our first hymn, How Can I Keep From Singing? And like I said, you're welcome to stand if you're here.
Come in. Come in, all who long to know how to love this world, how to keep eyes open, hands unclenched, arms wide, breathing deeply in and out. This is a time to practice, because there is still so much good and beauty and joy. But it can be hard to keep telling this tale with all the news and the wind and the rain and the trembling earth. Who wants to love this life anyway? Come in, all who teeter on this edge of cynicism, broken-hearted and trying still to remember laughter, and kindness, and the chance to be alive in these days when so much is at stake. In this place, we remind each other why we persist, giving each other courage to take this path that is not always easy, to keep practicing this love that cannot, will not let us go, and still calls us on. Reverend Gretchen Haley.
Good morning. My name is Hannah Franco Isaacs, and I am delighted to serve as your Director of Religious Education. This morning, I want to share with you a story that comes from the Jewish tradition. These last few days, Jews around the world have celebrated the holiday of Hanukkah. Hanukkah is a holiday that celebrates the miracle of light. We gather in our homes and light the menorah to remember days long ago when a small group of revolutionaries called the Maccabees rose up against their colonizers and won their independence. After the fighting was over, they went into their temple to pray. But while they needed oil to light the lamps for 8 days, they only had enough for one. They lit the lamp anyway, sure in their faith that God would provide. The light lasted for a full 8 days and 8 nights. Now when we celebrate Hanukkah, we light candles for 8 nights. We also eat food fried in oil. One of the best known foods we eat during Hanukkah is called latkes, or potato pancakes. I want to tell you a story today about a woman named Golda who and that latkes reminded her of everyday miracles. Now, Golda wasn't a rich woman, but she had enough to often provide for others. She was famous throughout the town for her latkes. Every year, people gathered in her home each night of Hanukkah for the golden, fried, delicious potato pancakes. One year, there was a problem with the potato harvest, and not many survived. By Hanukkah, Golda only had one potato left. She went to her friends and neighbors to ask for more, but they too were down to their last potato. On the first night of Hanukkah, she lovingly took that one potato and said, "Like the Maccabees, I believe in the miracle of Hanukkah." She was grating that one potato when there was a knock at her door. It was an old beggar who lived in the town. He came to her door because he knew her to be a generous woman and asked if she might have any latkes to share. In truth, she really didn't. One potato is not going to make very many latkes. But she added an egg and some more flour to the bowl and stretched it enough to feed herself and the old man. The next night, she went to the kitchen to prepare a meager dinner, and there, next to her menorah, were two potatoes. A knock at her door, and there was the man again, this time with a friend. She welcomed them in and once again fried up latkes. The next night, if you can believe it, she went out into her kitchen, and there, next to the menorah, were three potatoes. Well, you can guess what happened next. There was the old man at the door, this time with two of their neighbors. It went on this way until the last night of Hanukkah. If you had looked into Golda's house that night, you would have seen a warm, welcoming gathering of joyous people, celebrating together the miracle of light, celebrating the miracle of being together in community.
Now it's time for prayer, meditation, or reflection, as is your tradition.
Our words this morning are from the Reverend Sarah Lindsay. The season of light has begun. There's candles in the windows. The world is ablaze with twinkling lights that insist on hope and happiness. Even in a time that is so cold and bleak, around us the world presses, insisting on death and on hurt. Disease tearing through communities, bullets tearing through the flesh of children, judgment tearing through bodies that bring life, hunger and lack and greed tearing the world apart. And day after day, as night deepens, tears press through eyes that have been seen too much, known too much grief and sorrow, pressed from bodies that have so little left to give. Beyond the tears that say more than words ever could, the heart aches, the heart breaks. Joy, hope is hard to hold on to. Possibility seems a million miles away. Just a hint of the promise that once was. Like the light of the stars we catch in the dark. Dead already, beyond our knowing. Joy is hard to hold on to. And yet each night again, we take up the shamash and we light candles, small flames, one by one, defiant, free. Each night again, we flip the switch that illuminates a pine, hundreds of tiny lights, abundant, joyful. Each night, we bring the stars into our homes. We take up the old ancient wisdom, no matter how this time wants to make it fade, and we hold it fast, declaring with each flicker that in spite of it all, even when we can barely catch it, hope exists. Declaring with each flicker that in spite of it all, even when the tears can't stop falling, joy exists. With each of the millions of lights we kindle, determination comes, warmth grows, love is known, and happiness begins to bloom. So we light them, as we have before, and we will again. We never stop kindling the flame. Let us settle into silence together.
My name is Kim Transier, and I have two readings this morning. The first is by Robin Wall Kimmerer, an author and naturalist. Even a wounded world is feeding us. Even a wounded world holds us, giving us moments of wonder and joy. I choose joy over despair. Not because I have my head in the sand, but because joy is what the earth gives me daily, and I must return the gift. The second, Ruth Gendler. Joy drinks pure water. She has sat with the dying and attended many births. She denies nothing. She is in love with life, all of it, the sun and the rain and the rainbow. She rides horses at Half Moon Bay under the October moon. She climbs mountains, sings in the hills. She jumps from hot springs to cold springs without hesitation. Though joy is spontaneous, she is immensely patient. She does not need to rush. There are obstacles on every path, and every moment is a perfect moment. She is not concerned with success or failure or how to make things permanent. At times, joy is elusive. She seems to disappear even as we approach her. I see her standing on the ridge covered with oak trees, and suddenly the distance between us seems enormous. I am overwhelmed and wonder if the effort to reach her is worth it. Yet She waits for us. Her desire to accompany us is as great as our longing to accompany her.
That answers some of those painful questions. Says, light one candle. Candle on a menorah. The Jewish holiday of Hanukkah. Light a candle for decency. Light a candle for hope. Light a universal candle for peace. Light one candle for the Maccabee children, with thanks to their light didn't die. Light one candle for the pain they endured when their right to exist was denied. Light one candle for the terrible sacrifice justice and freedom demand. Light one candle for the wisdom to know when the peacemaker's time is at hand. Don't let the light go out, it's lasted for so many years. Don't let the light go out, let it shine through our love and our tears. Don't let the light go out, it's lasted for so many years. Don't let the light go out, let it shine through our love and our tears.
Light one candle for the strength that we need to never become our own foe.
Light one candle for those who are suffering pain we learned so long ago. Light one candle for all we believe in, let anger not tear us apart. Light one candle to bind us together with pieces of song in our hearts. Don't let the light go out, it's lasted for so many years. Don't let shine through our love and our tears. Don't let the light go out, let the light go out. Don't let the light go out, let it shine through our love and our tears.
And what is the memory that's valued so highly that we keep it alive in that flame? What's the commitment to those who have died? When we cry out, they have not died in vain.
We have come this far, always believing that justice will somehow prevail. This is the burden, this is the promise, and this is why we will not fail. Don't let the light go out, this light is a tool.
Holidays. They come. They demand joy and happiness. Hanukkah is here with its joyful celebrations and games and lots of fried food. Christmas songs just insist on it. Joy to the world. It's a holly jolly Christmas. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Everywhere you turn, the conversation and message is happiness and celebration. So here we go. It's joyful time. Just do it. I don't know about you, but joy can be difficult to muster up sometimes these days. So much blocks joy. We're almost 2 years into a pandemic that keeps jerking us around. We are alternatively afraid and hopeful. Expectations go up and down with waves of COVID that have no real explanation. Is the most recent significant decrease in Portland the end of the very last surge? Or are we on the edge of another one with the pressures of winter and Omicron? Nearly 1,000 people a day are still dying of COVID, and the ripples of grief and pain are everywhere in our world. We've developed new habits during the pandemic, leaving behind things that we so much once enjoyed. And even if we might be able to start them up again, it can be hard to bring what would now be new habits back into our lives. Many of us thought that the values represented by Unitarian Universalists would once again be represented in national, state, and local politics, since Democrats, who often champion the same values as you use, are in control. Instead, we've discovered that that is not the case. Abortion rights have been, and it appears will continue to be, ended for many women. Laws restricting voting and the power of voters have passed in many states. Immigrants still suffer at the border, and it appears will continue to do so. Democrats have policy ideas to help more people flourish and live better lives, but it seems that they may never pass them. Locally, people of all political and religious persuasions bicker over how to help people with no housing. Meanwhile, the rain and cold comes and our fellow citizens hunker down under blue tarps. Portland and other liberal cities have increased the police budgets that they cut after George Floyd protests nearly a year and a half ago, erasing progress on police reform. Mental health concerns are rising across the country. Schools are struggling to educate traumatized students. Teachers, healthcare professionals, and other essential workers are exhausted, and they are burning out. Guns flow freely into the hands of those with enough rage to kill even children. Suffering is real, and it's significant for ourselves and for so many others. Of course, finding joy might be hard. Sometimes it just feels downright irresponsible. Every culture and every religion grapples with how to explain and deal with human suffering. In American culture, we just try to make it go away. In some ways, to suffer is to have failed. We did not do the right things, make the right choices, care for ourselves in the right way. We grapple with suffering by taking a pill, solving the problem, fighting and denying death. I totally get this. If I don't feel well, I take pills and I do things to make myself feel better. If something uncomfortable or bad happens, I do everything I can to soothe it over or change the situation. If there is injustice that causes suffering, I want to offer charity and also get to the root of it. And this doesn't seem unreasonable. I don't plan to ever stop taking Tylenol when I get a headache or advocating for better ways to help people who live in dreadful conditions. But there is a dark side to the idea that we should and that we can vanquish suffering. The idea that we can stop suffering means that along with the original pain that we experienced, there is an added sense of failure when we can't fix whatever is wrong. This feeling of failure can lead to anger, irritability, despair, apathy, depression, and other negative states of being. How close to the surface so many of these negative emotions are today for so many of us. We are angry at those who won't be vaccinated and frustrated by the slow rollout of vaccines worldwide that allows COVID to mutate. We are irritable by the ways that the places we like to go are opening or they're not opening, including this congregation, when policies are not as we think that they should be. We feel despair or apathy as a controlling version of conservatism takes hold across the United States and world governments respond poorly to the growing disaster of climate change. And underlying everything else is fear. Fear about our well-being and the well-being of those who we most love. As this virus mutates and our economic system and climate shift and quake. So many of us are stressed, wound tight, unless our brains are primed to see danger everywhere that we turn. And maybe we believe that most of the suffering would end if others would just do the right thing. And that adds to our anger and our distress. All of these things are huge barriers to joy. Did you know that our brains are actually created to notice negative things more than positive ones? If we get a parking ticket after a walk with a friend, we are much more likely to remember and fret about that than the sensational rose bushes we saw, or how peaceful we felt being with our friend and talking. When difficulty surrounds us, our brain naturally focuses on it. So what do we do with the demands of joy that pulse through our culture this time of year? In 2015, the Dalai Lama, a Buddhist, and Desmond Tutu, an Anglican bishop, got together for a 7-day conversation about living a joyful life. Their conversation was published in the Book of Joy. Both men have suffered considerably during their lifetimes, while bringing hope and peace to so many. Both laugh a lot now, and while frail and aging, report joyful lives. Their first teaching is that life does not exist without suffering. Even as as technologically and pharmaceutically competent society, we cannot engineer a life without suffering. Bad things just happen. Pandemics, illnesses, betrayals, economic downturns, natural disasters, and on and on. We can advocate for our values in the public sphere, but when the day is done, we can't make the outcomes that we want them to be. We can't control most of our lives. What we can control, the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu say, is our reactions to pain and suffering. They say that the best ways to deal with suffering is with sadness and compassion. So they might argue that a helpful response to the large number of people, or how a large number of people just won't get vaccinated, so that prolongs the pandemic. And so instead of going straight to anger, is to go to sadness and be sad about all we've lost in this pandemic, and all that we might still lose. We can then open compassion up to ourselves for our sadness and our pain, and open up our sadness to others who are so badly impacted by this pandemic, people who've lost loved ones, health professionals and teachers, and those with underlying conditions, and those with very young children. These emotions open us up, while anger and despair close us off. So this brings us full circle back to joy. Here is the thing about joy. You don't have to be happy or out of pain or in a good place to experience joy. While the world is truly challenging and a broken place full of suffering, it is also beautiful and extraordinary. Think of flowers and Mount Hood and the raindrops on tips of pines. Consider the kindness and presence and humor of the people that you love the most. Ponder stories and music and art. We are all blessed with interests and passions that motivate us. Our brains all work in their unique, remarkable ways. And when we use them, they can bring us such pleasure and contentment. And so can our bodies. We get to eat, which I could say can be incredible. The people of the world actually created pizza and butter chicken and pad thai and chocolate. How great is that? We can open to joy no matter our state of being. Joy and sadness can exist together in the same moment. The Unitarian Universalist theologian, the Rebecca Parker, was once on the verge of suicide. As she walked through the night seeking death, an astronomer invited her to look through the telescope at Jupiter. She looked and was awestruck. An intense, exquisite joy flooded through her. She writes, "It would be wrong to think of this moment as one in which joy triumphed over despair. Such a view assumes bad feelings need to be excised or suppressed by stronger, better feelings. Peace or happiness or even survival are imagined to be accomplished by cutting something out or dominating some aspect of the self. Viewing the soul in this way internalizes violence. I did not defeat negative feelings of anguish and despair because I saw something more lovely and good. Rather, I became able to feel more. My feelings broadened. Sadness, pain, sadness, and despair were not eliminated and overcome. I embraced them with a larger heart. My consciousness had been broadened to embrace memories of religious community, immediate experience of the world's beauty, and the kindness of human beings, and a vivid sense of future possibility." Parker was not out looking for joy. She did not demand joy. It came unbidden when she paused from the nattering of her despairing mind and focused for a moment on the wonder of the universe. It was like a tiny miracle, unexplained, uncaused, simply there. I think about the Maccabees who fought the Syrian king for the sacred lands of Judea and their temple in Jerusalem. How awful it was. The Jewish people fighting once again for their land, their freedom, and their right to practice their faith in a place they considered most holy. Many died. Loss was intense. When they finally came to the temple, it was damaged and defiled. How tired they must have been. They won, but they did not win. They experienced so much loss, and their temple was in shambles. But somehow they found what they needed to do the next right thing. They cleaned and fixed and rededicated their temple to God. They needed to burn a particularly special oil to rededicate the temple. Among all the other hardships they'd faced, they only had oil for one night, until they could make other sacred oil. But as we know, that small amount of oil burned miraculously for 8 days and 8 nights until more precious oil could be found. I think of opening to joy like this story. We do our part, and miraculously, sometimes the joy bursts through. Joy is a gift of being alive, no matter our circumstances. So what is our part? Well, we first have to set aside the idea that joy can only happen when life is free of suffering. When we somehow built that perfect life, been the perfect person, took care of our body and minds in those perfect ways. And that joy is a reward for that. Because joy is not. Joy is a gift that we are all given. Instead, we have to remember that suffering is a normal, regular part of life. It just is. But joy can be, too, a normal, regular part of life. Opening to joy means paying attention and noticing the good around us. This is what Rebecca Parker did. Just for a moment, invited by another, she attended to something amazing, and it changed everything. It gave her a chance to live again. And it can do the same for us. Our brains default to the bad and to the difficult. Our part is consciously overriding the default. We need to actually notice what is good. We need to acknowledge it and then be grateful for it. We need to take time to simply appreciate and love the extraordinary world that we get to live in. Brené Brown says of Americans, "We're a nation hungry for more joy because we're starving from a lack of gratitude." Consumerism thwarts joy and gratitude. It teaches us to be constantly in motion, getting a hit of happiness from new objects and experiences, instead of simply appreciating what it naturally is. Gratitude reminds us that what is good and life-giving already exists. However, gratitude is not an automatic human response to being alive. We have to train ourselves. We have to remind ourselves by paying attention and saying thank you consciously every day. Joy is a fleeting emotion. It just comes and then it dissipates. And our part is learning that when it happens, appreciating and savoring that moment. Don't rush headlong into the next moment. Don't start worrying that this will go away if you don't sort of hold it perfectly. You just need to lean into it, experience it, let it bloom through your body. Joy is a grace. It comes freely to us. And this, the poet Jan Richardson shares this experience so well. She says of joy, "You could prepare, but still, it will come to you by surprise. Crossing through your doorway, calling your name in greeting, turning like a child who quickens suddenly within you. It will astonish you how wide your heart will open in welcome for the joy that finds you so ready and still so unprepared." Let us sing to the joy. You really want to sing with us.
Now let us sing to the Lord, sing to the Lord.
Benediction is from Mary Oliver. Every day, I see or hear something that more or less kills me with delight, that leaves me like a needle in the haystack of light. It's what I was born for, to look, to listen, to lose myself inside this soft world, to instruct myself over and over in joy and acclamation. We extinguish this flame, but not the vision and compassion of our faith. May they stay until we meet again.
Yeah.